Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. It's not unusual for me to chat with someone on a subject I know nothing about. I do my research. I can usually come up with some intelligent questions, and the conversation unfolds. Today, what can I say? Russell talks circles around me. Not in a bad way. He just knows his subject matter so thoroughly. It's dyslexia. Quite honestly, several times I thought my brain would explode with his explanations of the learning issue and/or his processes, and then he would deftly turn on the light and all would become clear. Dyslexia is becoming more recognized, and Russell is at the forefront of destigmatizing it and helping those with dyslexic brains excel. Listen in. You might have to listen twice. But if you have someone with dyslexia in your life, this conversation could be game-changing. Oh, one aside before we begin, I mentioned the movie My BFF. It's actually the BFG I was thinking of. Listen now to my conversation with Russell Van Brocklin. Most of my conversations are pertinent to our boomer demographic. Sometimes we may be past the age of action on a subject, but I feel the information is worth passing on to our children, mostly our daughters. Today, I was thinking my guest's topic would be great information for us as grandparents. And then I realized it's going to be important for any and every age group, including us. It might touch a nerve with you. It might explain an issue in the life of a child. It might solve a puzzle around a grandchild. Dyslexia. An online definition I found says, oh, and this is great because Russell, I was just browsing through your website. You've got the exact same definition. So this is great. Dyslexia is defined as an unexpected difficulty in learning to read. Dyslexia takes away an individual's ability to read quickly and automatically and to retrieve spoken words easily, but it does not dampen their creativity and ingenuity. Now, my guest today will explain it further and give you a bunch more information about living and excelling with a dyslexia diagnosis. Russell Van Brocklin, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us more about dyslexia.
Well, I think you'll find it interesting with my life experience and what and how I do what I do, because this was the last thing I was supposed to do with my life. I was supposed to be a bureaucrat for the New York State government. It was the late 90s, and I was finishing up college, and I wanted to know how bills became laws. I didn't want some course, I wanted to know. So I signed up for the New York State Assembly internship program. I show up there and I say, here's my neuropsychological evaluation. I have a first grade reading and writing level. And the director of the program just kind of went pale. He said that th this is just not going to work. Because typically how it works is you're in, you have an intern, you have a staff, the chief of staff, which used to be an intern, and then the assembly member. That's it. And so he goes up to the speaker's office and they said, you have to accommodate this kid. We are not sending him away. So they got a committee together and they told me they're pulling me out because of the severity of my dyslexia from the legislative office building. They're putting me in the Capitol. And they were concerned because I'm not going to be around my peers at all. So I was like, fantastic, because that was a graduate internship, real policy work. And I go to the office and then I found out why they put me there. This office ran the assembly day to day and they had three administrative assistants. So I write up my horrible writing for a proposal that I had to put together and they had to clean it up. They looked at it and they go, okay. They said, don't worry, we do this for the director. He has an Ivy League education. Yours is, I said, yes, yeah, special. So that worked out. And then for the academic portion, I gave for several hours a presentation for my research that was in lieu of the research paper, which was a very standard accommodation for me back then. So then they go ahead and they recommended 15 credits of A minus. It goes back to the university, the flagship campus, the State University of New York Center at Buffalo. And the political science department looked at the accommodations and said, we don't like these. Even though it was the New York State government that came up with it. So they said, here's your 15 credits of F.
They could just do that?
Yes, they don't have to take the recommendations from the assembly internship program. That happened 27 years ago. That was the only time in the history of the program before or since. And they just flunked me because I'm dyslexic.
Holy
So you have,
crikey.
yeah, do you know what that does to a grade point average?
Oh, yeah.
So I got upset. So just so you know where I left off, I was in the majority leader's office. I had more contacts than anybody else in the undergrad internship program. I had offers. I could have become a lobbyist. I could have, they loved me there. I stayed late to do work, like all the time. So state agencies, all these people wanted to hire me. I would have been on the fast track up the state bureaucracy. But I decided not to continue with that because I was so angry. I went to my professors that I still liked, and I said, how do I learn to read and write in grad school so I can show other dyslexics not to go through this discrimination? I'm done with this. So they said, law school. I said, okay. So I went and I audited two law school classes. I found a professor who's dyslexic, Professor Warner. So I go in, it's second day of contracts. And what they do is they crush you. They will literally ask you questions until you don't know the answer, and then they keep asking questions to embarrass the heck out of you until you adapt. That didn't happen to me. So just so you know what dyslexia is, this is the top book on dyslexia from Yale, medical doctor Sally Shaywitz, Overcoming Dyslexia. So in this book, Overcoming Dyslexia, second edition, I'm going to turn to page 78, figure 23. That's dyslexia. So do you see how the back part of your brain has this massive neuroactivity and mine has next to zero?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, that's kindergarten through college. The front part of my brain is 2.5 times overactive. Do you see that?
All righty, okay, yeah.
Okay. That front part of the brain that's 2.5 times overactive deals with articulation followed by word analysis according to Yale. So when my professor asked me this legal question, this is articulation. This is 2.5 times the neuroactivity. All right, there was a lot of word analysis going through the case. I am now switching from a part of my brain that is essentially nothing going on to where it's 2.5 times overactive. So this ex to explain what's going on. The other thing that I found later is that if you're in a specialty, an area of extreme interest and ability, that's grad school. Undergrad is very broad. Grad school is hyper-focused. That's where dyslexics excel. So what happened when he called on me is everything lined up for the first time in my life. And remember, this is academic war. He's trying to just put me down. So he asked me a question, I answer as his peer, as his equal. Then he goes back and forth a few times. Nothing. He's not shit. He's not crushing me. I'm answering exactly the way he would have answered. So then he starts really getting aggressive. I get aggressive. I'm shouting at him. He's shouting at me. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. He raises his hands. He said, Russell, you couldn't be any more correct. In the interest of time, I have to move on to the next case. He never had that in his 30-year career. My classmates are stunned. I learned to think like a lawyer in that time period. I learned to read within a month. I learned to write within a couple of years from law school. So then I wanted to go and share what I did with everybody else. So I went to the New York State
Sorry,
government.
can I slow you down? How
Sure.
did this exchange with this professor then fast track a process that you hadn't been able to grasp or
Ever do
whatever?
because I finally, when you're a dyslexic in your specialty, in your area of extreme interest and ability, which happened, I was interested in politics. Okay. This law school is the ultimate form of that. It's the ultimate form of a liberal arts education. I just, for the first time, I'm given this extremely dense material and I could finally read it. Okay. I just figured it, I figured things out there at an extraordinarily rapid pace because I had to. I was given this book. on contract. And within a couple of hours, I was actually reading it. I had all these ideas flying around my head until I found this worked. I had this, and finally epiphanies after epiphanies because I had to read it. I had to prepare the case because I knew if he called on me, I wasn't going to sit there going, "Bah." I wasn't going to be like everybody else. I wasn't going to be embarrassed. I had enough of that. And that just compelled me to find the solution. And I did. So I got through that first case, but once I could understand the process, I was able to learn to read so well that when I took my property classes, they would give us these questions that would take, 3 to 5 minutes to think because they're really trying to fool you in a very sophisticated way. I didn't take 3 to 5 minutes. I didn't take 3 to 5 seconds. I would re get to the end and I'd say, there's the answer within a second. And I had perfect scores on every test except for one where I missed the B and the D. I saw the wrong thing. And I would just toss in the, I mean, I'm reading slower than the rest of them, but I'm thinking in orders of magnitude faster. And I would just go down 20 minutes into the class period and say, here's your thing. It's done. It's nothing. My classmates are really irritated because most of them don't even come close to finishing, and they're mostly wrong. I said, this is a joke. This is nothing. Then I came to legal research and writing. Ooh, that took me years to figure that one out. And I was never very good at it.
Okay, so I'm in the middle of an AI course currently. Is it possible, like you found your strength, that legalese just suited your brain to a T and your passion and everything else? You may not be able to answer this, but my thought is, I'll just say it and I won't turn it into a question, is could somebody conceivably give information they can't follow, feed it into AI and say, rewrite this as though it's a legal brief or something, whatever their passion is. Do you think that's possible?
Yes, because I've done that. So
Oh,
let
I
me
thought I was
just
being
tell you.
brilliant.
No, well, let me tell. I'll get to, but let me just tell you what I did with this, and I'll come back to how I got to that answer. So then I went and I got New York State Senate funding to do my research, which took years, by the way. Okay, they don't fund this research, this type of research, and I got them to do it anyway. So I'm in the Avery Park Central School District. That's where I went to high school, right outside of Albany. I took 11th and 12th grade severely dyslexic students who were highly motivated, highly intelligent, college-bound, excellent family support. Their best teacher, Susan Ford. I'm dealing with the best possible situation. And we reduced the class size to 5 to 1 to 6 to 1. So then for 180 days, I gave them the graduate rec I gave them the graduate rec exam and analytical writing assessment. This is the test to go into grad school after college. They scored generally in the zero percentile. At the end of that 180 sessions, they're scoring in the average range of entering graduate students, some well above average. They all went to college. They all graduated GPAs of 2.5 to 3.6, cost New York State less than $900 a kid. All right. Now, your question. Yes, that can be done. So how we do that is, again, I'm going back to the science. Here's the book again. I'm showing you the two brains. Now, do you see again the front part of my brain is 2.5 times overactive?
Okay, yes.
Okay. Yale said this was articulation followed by word analysis. But when I presented this in New York City in 2006, what happened is they asked, would this work with normal kids? And I said, no. So I had to flip it over to word analysis followed by articulation. Word analysis first, articulation second. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yes. So your question was, is there a way we can take that understanding, put it into artificial intelligence? And then come out with a legal document or come out with something that expresses an advanced form of what we're trying to say. Is that essentially what you were asking?
I think so. I express it in a way that, like, it sounds like your strength became that legalese, and you were able to devour stuff that you couldn't devour of other subjects. So just to put, like, for you it's legalese, for the next person it could be something totally different, but have AI rewrite it in that language, like that tongue, I guess, that
Okay,
form.
I think what I'd like, I think we, I, and I see where you're trying to go. Let's try to switch it over to something that would apply exactly for you, and that people can adapt this to themselves as they listen to the episode. So for you, the first question I need to ask is, what is your speciality? What is your area of extreme interest and ability?
Holy moly, I've been through a lot in these last 70 years.
Yeah, but just one thing. What are you really passionate about? What are you really good at? If you have, and it's several, just pick one. It's
Let's just go with the podcasting and editing podcasts. I love it.
you love editing podcasts. Okay. So the first thing is, I'm going to show you how we're going to take this as a general process from the very beginning all the way up to how to do an advanced body paragraphs that you can then put into the AI and do whatever you want to with. Okay. But what people don't understand is, when you're dealing with advanced forms of the AI, you really have to do things. You have to be very specific with it, or you just get slop out. I'm going to show you how to get specific. All right. But when we're starting out with this, just for some of those in your audience who have grandkids who are dyslexic, or some of their kids are dyslexic and they still can't write and they want to do something, I've run into a number of grandparents who've decided to take this on. So, have you ever known a dyslexic elementary school kid?
I don't think so,
Okay. So,
personally.
I'm just going to give you an example that I use all the time, because just because it's so relevant, people just relate to it well. Her name was Sarah. She was 10 years old in fifth grade, writing and reading at the second grade level. Her sentences were, as her teachers described it, essentially randomly placed misspelled words. So I'm going to show you, and her favorite thing in the world was swimming. All right, she's on the swim team. She gets in the pool every chance she can get. So what we're going to do is, I'm going to just walk you through the process of getting her to write a basic three-reason sentence as a starting point. And this is a starting point to answer your question on how do we work with the artificial intelligence. Remember what I said, the front part of the brain is word analysis followed by articulation. So we're going to start off with word analysis. You're going to type out hero, plus sign, what are we talking about? Okay. Then we're going to have Sarah type out, copy it. That's okay. Professor James Collins, Strategies for Struggling Writers, Default Writing Strategy of Copying. Then she's going to copy out hero plus sign, what are we talking about? Then we're going to swap out hero for her name. Sarah plus sign, what are we talking about? You're going to have a list of 10 things that Sarah really, really likes, and then 10 things that she absolutely hates. Okay. We're going to go to the top of the list for what she really likes, and that's swimming. So we got Sarah plus sign, what are we talking about? We're going to swap out what are we talking about with swimming. Sarah plus sign, swimming. See how I got there? Now I'm going to try to fool you with the simplest questions ever. If you answer them exactly what I ask, it'll work. If not, it's not going to work. They're the simplest questions ever. Do you think I'll be able to fool you?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, now most people make a mistake and they have an epiphany on what dyslexia really is. So remember, we have Sarah plus sign swimming. We need swimming is her favorite thing in the world. We now need to swap out the plus sign for a word. Here's my question. Does Sarah like or dislike swimming?
Like.
You did very well. You answered it correctly. Now put that, replace that word with a plus sign. What's the sentence?
With the plus sign?
Nope,
Sarah plus. Okay,
we're going to
so
swap out the plus sign for that word that you just said.
Sarah, I said like, but it should be likes swimming.
So what's the sentence?
Sarah likes swimming.
You got it right. You're one of the f You see how you said it should be liked, but then you went back to like, because that's what I asked. I
That's what
didn't
we
fool
talked
you.
about. Whew.
Right. But I did not fool you. You are one of the less than 2% of people I talk to that actually gets that correct.
Okay,
Because you answered, you got it right.
again, I appreciate that. I breathe a huge sigh of relief. Do you teach Sarah to actually be able to say Sarah likes swimming,
Yeah,
or
that's
does
what
it
the
matter?
problem is. No, the problem is how do we get Sarah to add the yes because she doesn't know. Most educated people just add the yes automatically. You didn't. Okay. So the question is how do we get her to add the yes? Well, I want you to imagine that your grandchild, let's say Sarah was your granddaughter, and you had $10 million in the bank, and she's doing horrible, like just horrible. Horrible, and she's going to keep doing horrible. And a school knocked on your door and said, "We've been correcting things like this for Sarah for 99 years or 50 years. We can fix this in 4 to 5 years at 75,000 a year. Are you going to pay them?"
Absolutely.
Yes, but most people don't have 10 million in the bank. They don't have house money to put towards this because what they do is they use an Orton-Gillingham multi-sensory structured language approach, which means they use the senses, seeing, touching, hearing, to teach her how to add the S. It takes 2 years and $11,000 for you to learn how to do that after a bachelor's degree. And then it takes years and years and years to fix it. Here's something we can use. And again, I'm showing you a book, Overcoming Dyslexia. We're going to use modern brain science. We're going to shift it from the back part of the brain to the front part of the brain. I'm going to ask Sarah, read what she wrote out loud. Sarah likes swimming. I'm going to ask Sarah, does that sound generally correct? She's going to say no. I'm going to say, Sarah, fix it. And then she'll write, Sarah likes swimming, because that's what sounds correct. You're going to practice that 20 times, 10 likes and 10 dislikes until it's all correct. Do you see how like and dislike is a very simple form of word analysis?
Okay, yes.
That's the front part of the brain. It's 2.5 times overactive. Now, I'm going to add because, and do you see how the reasons is a simple form of articulation?
Yes.
Okay, so we're taking it from the back part of the brain where she and I got nothing going on, and we're moving to the front part where we have 2.5 times the neural activity. So now we're going to go, Sarah likes swimming because reason one. Give me a simple reason why a 10-year-old girl would like swimming.
She's weightless.
She's weightless. Sarah likes swimming because she's weightless. Do you see how we have a whole mess of misspelled words now?
Yes.
Okay, here's how we fix that. We have, first of all, you tell Sarah to drop a period, and then you say, Sarah, read what you wrote out loud. Does it sound generally correct? If not, fix it. She was going to get rid of all those nasty grammar errors. Mild to medium grammar errors, we don't care about. We leave that to the teacher. We're getting rid of the nasty stuff. Now we got a bunch of misspelled words. Here's how we fix it. We tell Sarah she has to keep retyping the sentence until all the words are spelled correctly. And she's going to say, I'm not going to make that mistake. And she's going to keep making it for between generally 3 and 13 times. Between 9 and 13 times, the kid is concentrating so hard, sometimes you can see sweat coming down their forehead. The more times they make the mistake, the more times they say, I'm not going to make it, and they keep making it, they concentrate deeper and deeper. That's where the magic happens. That's where eventually they get it right. And you do 10 likes and 10 dislikes until everything is spelled correctly. Then it's reason one and reason two, then reason one, reason two, and reason three. If you're talking about a fifth grader, that's going to take between 2 and 6 weeks. If you're talking about a third grader, it's going to take the entire semester. If you're talking younger than, if you're talking about a first grader, you can be at that for a year, year and a half. If you're talking about older kids, they generally go a lot faster. My process is the exact opposite of Orton-Gillingham, where the older you are, the quicker you pick it up. Why is this important to Sarah? Because not only this brings the writing up to end of second, beginning third grade level, but for the reading, people keep asking me, how do we teach reading? I say, you don't. Because if they can write it, they can read it. They can write it, they can read it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. But that's part three of the model. So when you're dealing with a dyslexic, I can't get these kids to do anything until I remember what happened to me in law school. I really liked law. I was, if you're interested in political science, you're going to like law school. And I found that you have to be in the kid's specialty during the intervention period. So let me explain how important the specialty is. I just want your readers, your listeners to understand. I never saw this before, Casey. I will never see this again. This was a one-off. This is the book I gave her, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, all 900 pages of it. I met Casey when she was at the end of fifth grade. She was 10 years old, turned 11 over the summertime, reading at the second grade level. And I gave her a book that's 900 pages at the 10th grade level. Okay? Because this is what her specialty was. She insisted on doing reading first. I said, okay, Casey, here's how you do it. 10, 20-minute sessions, a couple times a week. Your mom will tell you when to start and stop. I didn't know Casey. She locked herself away for 2 to 3 hours a night for 6 months, most of the day during the summertime. During her, 6 months later, she's sixth grade, 11 years old, and during a silent reading session, her classmates come over. They keep wondering what her book is. None of them can get past through the first paragraph. Her teacher calls. I thought your daughter was severely dyslexic. I thought she had a reading problem. She's the best reader in the grade by grade levels. What's going on? Her mom calls me. I said, what do you think she's been doing in her room for 2 to 3 hours a night? She could afford to have me work with her 15 minutes a week. This was all Casey. She did sixth grade level, sorry, in 6 months, she did eight grade level increases. All right. Now, why am I spending so much time on this? Because her mom wanted to know, is this just in Theodore Roosevelt? What if there's a book she doesn't really like? So I assigned her this little thing, Walt Disney, The Triumph of the American Imagination. All 1,000 pages. This is a little harder. That's my most popular book because kids love Disney World. They want to know what the Disney magic is, and it's two universal themes. Took Casey 3 months to find both of them. It normally takes 2 years. And then because I knew her mom would get a kick out of this, I got her mom on the call. And I said, Casey, how did you like that book? I hated it. I said, well, you're done. You can do whatever you want to with it. And in front of her mom, she destroyed it. She was taking out her anger on it. And here's the key point of why I'm spending so much time on this. I said, Casey, how much did your motivation drop when you don't like a book? She said, 50%. And this is the most motivated kid I've ever worked with. Typical students are down 75, 80%. So think about how our educational system is. Dyslexics want to specialize. I will normally have kids on these books for about 2 to 3 years. And normal school, they do like 5, 10 books a year outside their specialty. So now they're down 75, 80%. Next thing you need to know about dyslexics is it's very hard for us when we're not at grade level during the intervention period to take something that is from the general to the specific. So do you remember back when you were in school, they would teach you the big picture, and then over time, they would slowly get down to the details. That's like asking us to grab fog. If you ask us, what effect did Martin Luther King's famous I Have a Dream speech have on the American Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s? It's like grabbing fog. We need to ask us a very specific point and then go out from there. What personally compelled Martin Luther King to want to give his famous speech? We go to his biography, we find out that answer gives us a question, which gives us an answer, which gives us a question, which gives us an answer. We have to force the dyslexic brain to organize itself by using writing as a measurable output. So, how do we go into that a bit deeper? If you ask a dyslexic or ADD or ADHD kids, it's all the same. In your specialty, your area of extreme interest and ability, do you have ideas flying around your head at light speed, but with little to no organization? They're going to say yes. So we have to force the brain to organize itself by using writing as a measurable output. So the system is the speciality, what they're really interested in, from the specific to the general, word analysis followed by articulation. Once you do that, to give you an example of how effective this is, I met Kimberly last December 27th. She just had her son read. She spent $700 to have her kids tested by the state of Ohio. She homeschools them. He was a year and a half behind. His reading was at the 11th percentile. His writing was at the fourth percentile. We went through that process. She was doing this an hour and a half a week for 6 months. At the end of the year, he was reading at the 65th percentile, writing at the 64th percentile. This is important because his friends over the summer came to him and said, "Reed, we want you in school due to be with us socially, classes, lunch, everything. If this was January, you would have been put in special education." Unhappy kid. Now he's in sixth grade, in mainstream classes, getting A's and B's. That's how powerful this is. Now, you asked a question before about your speciality. How can we deal with that with AI? This background just give that's how we do basic stuff. I'm going to tell you how we do it for advanced paragraphs. So I want you to think back to your school days. How were you as a writer?
Maybe average to barely just above average.
Okay. Have you ever heard of how to use a warrant in a body paragraph?
No.
Nobody outside of PhD students generally know what this is. So, do you remember in school you would have your topic sentence and then your evidence, and the paragraphs never seemed to really flow what right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So, how do you take what you're good at and put it into body paragraphs so you can actually communicate with the artificial intelligence? So again, what so you're so the audience doesn't can remember, what was your specialty?
Editing podcasts.
Editing podcast. Okay. So what we would do is we would first use a universal theme. So let me describe how we would use that, and then I'm going to show you how to answer that question. I want you to think of a movie. Did you ever go to the movies that often?
Oh, I haven't been to a movie for years, but keep going.
But did you used to go to the movies?
Yes.
Okay. So I want you to think about a movie that you saw that you really liked, that everybody knows about, that's really famous, that you think is one of the best ever. What's that movie?
9 to 5.
9 to 5. Okay. Now, what is the, now I want you to think back to when 9 to 5 came out. If you look back at the reviews, I want you to think about the people that went to the Ivy League. Do you recall how they would typically say, "This happened, then this happened, then this happened"? It's like you tape the sporting event, and then you watch it later. Then somebody tells you the score. It's like, why bother? Do you remember how that's how reviews were generally written? Here's how we do a much better job with a universal thing. I want you to think about what is a one-word universal theme for 9 to 5? In your view, what's the best word to describe that movie?
Can I use two words?
Go ahead and try two.
Female empowerment.
Okay, female empowerment. Okay. So now I want you to imagine if you wrote a review based on female empowerment, all right, on the actors, the director, and the screenwriter, how you think all of them dealt with female empowerment. And then you wrote the review that way. Can you see how you would be expressing how you want to communicate this through that universal theme? And people can understand what you thought of the movie, may see it or not based on your review, but you're not telling them this happened, this happened, and this happened.
I feel like one of those
Does that make
kids with
sense?
I feel like one of those kids where the light just came on. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, it's because people understand universal themes. Now, when you're dealing with the artificial intelligence, I can tell you my background on this because I'm one of the experts on it. At the advanced one, when ChatGPT, OpenAI came out with their pro version last December, they say we're going from $20 a month to $200 a month. I bought it that day, and I've been using that and what other advanced ones from other companies ever since. Okay, to do really advanced stuff. So when you're talking to AI, I kind of like to describe it as a temperamental, ill-raised, dyslexic child. Okay, it doesn't want to do things. It just goes off all over the place. So how do you deal with it? Well, when you're looking at this, you need to give it really good context. So when we're talking about you want to do editing of AI, I would go and find like the best pieces of writing on how to do this. Okay. And I would just take the best articles, and then I would take all of them, and I put it in. I find the best one is not OpenAI for this. It's actually Sonic 4.5. All right. That's from a company. The people that did that model used to work at OpenAI, and they moved off and created their own. It's strictly more for business. It's writing quality so much better. So what you would do is find the best articles on this. Then go to Sonic 4.5, and I would say take these articles, combine them, synthesize them, put them in one piece of writing. Okay. And then I would tell you, you can tell it what grade level to write it at. All right. So then it goes and does that. Most of the time, people are more comfortable than eighth grade writing level. So now you get this big long document. Now, how do you learn and communicate what you want to do to advance things? Do you remember when you were in high school, they showed you how to find quotes?
Sure, I don't remember, but that's okay. Keep
Okay.
going.
So just like I showed you how to come up with a universal theme from 9 to 5, when you're looking at all of these, you can ask the with your synthesized document, you can ask the AI, what are the 5 or 10 best universal themes that represent this document? And then give you customized definitions. You, as the human, have to pick one. If there's not in the 5 or 10, ask it to keep giving you more until you find one that you're happy with. Once you find that universal theme, then I want you to go through, and this is just how you do a body paragraph. You can repeat this for many body paragraphs as you want. You go and you find, I would look near the beginning of the document and near the end, and I would find all the quotes, one sentences that deal with that universal theme. One at the beginning, one at the end. And then what I would do is then work with the AI to whittle down which one best represents that universal theme, that what sentence. Now you have two sentences. Now what you're going to do is say, okay, AI, we now have these two sentences. How do I take these two quotes and to create a topic sentence for my paragraph? And have it give you a bunch of options until you find one that you really like. Now I'm going to show you how to use a warrant. Because even remember, as you said back in high school, we had our topic sentence, we had our evidence, but it never flowed very well. So a warrant is used at the PhD level, not the master's, at the PhD level. It's from a book called The Craft of Research, which was designed to help PhD students write their doctoral dissertations when they didn't know how. Because both quotes came from the same universal theme. And we have your topic sentence. We're going to use a warrant to connect them in a conversational, analytical way. So just ask the AI, what's a warrant? How do I apply this? Because they're the same universal theme. How do I connect the topic sentence with the two quotes that I have? And it'll discuss it whether you can find out more precisely what a warrant is and how, what the, what the, give it, have it give you 5 or 10 examples. Pick the one that you like. All right, then there's some more advanced stuff that we teach kids for, high school, college level stuff, but that's New York State Regents exam material and craft of research. And most people in your generation don't care about that because they're generally doing this for themselves and not for work. But if you do it that way, and then you decide how many universal themes do you like, each universal theme will get you a new paragraph. All right, and then from there, you can then, now you have really good context to talk to the artificial intelligence, and that can then take that and you can go any which way you want to with it. The main key thing here is I found out if you can do the craft of research, you can do artificial intelligence. So it's context, get everybody on the same page, problem solution. Most people of your generation are interested in the context and going through that process. You can then really have something solid to give to the AI what you're trying to say. And usually with Sonic 4.5, you can then ask it, I want to go this way, and it'll give you ideas on how to do that. So much better than ChatGPT. Okay. And then you can figure out what document you want to create, and that'll get you started.
Okay. Now, when
That's
you
a
first
lot.
it is. Okay, when you first contacted me, you've gave me some talking points, and I'm going to get to those in a minute. I do want to backtrack and ask you one question. When you were
Sure.
talking about Sarah like swimming and working that way through to Sarah likes swimming, you talked about her typing that line. Is
Always
there a
typing.
difference? Okay, so there's a
Yes.
difference between trying to handwrite and the keyboard.
You can't handwrite because let
Okay.
me give you an example. I went back, just so you know how serious this is. When that original study, the top student scored in the 70th percentile of undergrad students, I gave him a much simpler prompt and I said, handwrite out the answer. Then I sent it back to the SUNY Distinguished Professor in Psychology. The first prompt was really hard for him, and he scored in the 70th percentile. The second prompt is an area that he knew well, and he handwrote it out. And she said, I am finding it very hard to return this at the 30th percentile. It should be at the sixth because the grammar sucks. The spelling's bad. Because when you're taking a dyslexic, to write the word letter W instead of hitting a key is taking so much space because now you're sending it back to the back of the brain. Well, we got nothing going on. The whole thing crashes. And the iPad doesn't work. The iPhone doesn't work. It has to be a real keyboard, which for most people is a laptop. Some people use a desktop.
External keyboard.
Yes, exactly. It absolutely has. We tr I tried the iPhone. I tried the iPad. It just doesn't work.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I'm almost keeping up to speed here. Okay, so we're talking to primarily boomers, and I'm reading here from your message to me. A student taking a student specialty and turning a boomer's real interests. So let's go with like really obvious stuff. There could be recipes, travel plans, medical portals, into fuel for faster, calmer reading. Now, I think you've already explained it, but I'm talking to you like your AI. Could you get more specific about?
Sure, exactly. I know exactly. So I'm going back. Do you remember you said you had a light bulb on when we were talking about a universal thing?
Yes.
Let's go back to that. Let's just assume that you're really interested in movies and you want to discuss it further. So what you said was empowering women. Okay. So what we're going to do is we have to go back. And to really make this effective, do you see how empowering women is so broad? We need to narrow it down. Okay, so it's 9 to 5. What we're going to do is I'm going to give you a formula. It's because this is what I use to teach dyslexics to read. It's called hero plus sign, universal theme plus sign, villain.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, so well, we're going to start off with the hero. So in that movie, who's the hero?
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton. What is it that Dolly Parton wants to do? One sentence.
Dolly Parton wants to be respected for her abilities, not
Okay.
her chest size.
Dolly Parton wants to be respected for her abilities, not her chest size. We're going to look for two words. The action word, which will bring the hero generally towards the goal that they're looking for, and the most important word. I do this because remember, we're using the front part of the dyslexic brain, word analysis followed by articulation. This is word analysis. Okay. The action word in that sentence is wants. That's representing what she's trying to accomplish. So now we're going to go to the most important words. I think there were two, at least two in that sentence. What were the two really important words?
Respect and abilities.
Respect. Okay. Which way do you want to go? Respect or abilities?
Respect.
Respect. Okay. So now, would you want to go with wants or respects? I'd probably go with respect.
I was going to say I prefer that word, but not in the
Yeah.
verb form, not in the verb form.
Right, but respect, okay?
Respect.
So what we're looking for is, do you see how respect is much more precise than empowering women?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what you could do if you so desired is to go to thesaurus.com. Don't use their dictionary because it sucks. Use Merriam-Webster's online dictionary. If you really want to get precise, you're gonna look at all the words that it recommends. If you don't know what they are, look them up in Merriam-Webster's online dictionary. What I do with the kids is I have them type out the word and type out the definition. And eventually, as they do that, they're going to build a vocabulary of hundreds of evolved words over months. Okay, that's how I teach them to read. Now, we're adults. We don't have to do that. You could just copy and paste the word into a Word document or Excel, whatever you want to do, and you pick out your definition. What you want to do is find something that best matches what's in your head and which one just feels right. All right. Find the best one on that level. And then if you want to, you can go down level after level until all the words on the bottom are what I call junk words. And then the last one is the one that best matches the definition that's in your head. But you also have to balance it with what word just feels right. And then you pick your word, however far you want to go with it. That is going to allow you to laser focus what you want to say about 9 to 5 and what she really wants to do. It'll be your internal word, your universal thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So, but right now, just for this example, we're just going to go with respect because remember what you had that light bulb come on when we said empowering women, and then we can do the review. If you go back and say it's about respect, now you can write a much more effective review. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay,
I think
but
I'm
we're not done.
hesitating. Okay, keep on going then.
We're not done yet because now what we do is now we have to pick our, remember, a story that's good always has a hero and a villain. So Dolly Parton wants respect. Is the ultimate villain. They're there to try to prevent the hero from accomplishing their goal. Is the villain a person or a concept in that movie?
I'd say a person.
Who's the person?
Dabney Coleman.
Okay. The boss,
The
essentially.
boss. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So now what we would then do, you see how that's a much more evolved form of word analysis.
Yes.
Okay. Now we're going to go because we're going to come up with three good reasons. Okay. Good reasons. For each reason, we're going to reduce that to a universal theme. And then for the universal theme, we're going to take a transcript of the movie and you're going to find, I usually do a beginning of a document, the end of a document, the best universal theme for that movie. And then you see how what I told you ahead of time, we take the two universal themes, form a topic sentence. Then we use AI to say we're going to connect this with those two quotes with a warrant. Then we do that. But then we're also now going to flip it back and we're going to turn it around. We're going to look through the villain's eyes. The boss, what does he want to do? We come up with his universal theme. The hero we know is Dolly Parton. And we're going to come up with three good reasons. And we're going to do the same thing. Find those quotes, make those body paragraphs. Now, this is a much more evolved form of doing that. Now you can take that with AI and start writing some really completely original things and share that online. And it's not going to be the same thing everybody else has said. It's going to be original from you.
I'm going to admit here that right now I'm thinking, I hope my grandson never listens to this episode because he's in grade 11 and he still needs to do it without AI.
Well,
Come.
here's the thing with the grandkids. I have a, as you see, I have a process for everything.
Yeah.
So I have a process from kindergarten through grad school. I teach the craft of research. What I tell the kids is learn the process and then take it to your teacher. How do we do AI ethically? Explain the process to the teacher, write it out. This is what it is. And then ask the teacher, can I use AI for any of this? And you're going to find some teachers will say, You can use AI for a lot of it and mark down what they can use. Some will say some will say a little, and some will say none. And it's by the teacher. Everyone else is different. So you do that, then he goes home and he uses the AI, turns it in. Then if any other teacher complained, they said, my teacher signed off on this, my individual teacher for that class. And then that's ethical. And the teachers understand if one of my peers said this is ethical, now it's a debate amongst teachers, their peers. They accept that. Other parents, administrators can accept that. That's how you use AI ethically. And I've had kids who said, you know, I had one teacher in one class that I could use it like crazy. Another one said a middle amount, and another one said, don't go near that blanking thing. All right. And he did that for each of his classes. And the teachers had to admit it was ethically done because one of their peers okayed it. Exactly.
Oh God, this conversation is like this just over my head, but I'm loving it. So thank you for
Just
that.
re-listen to the episode, and a lot of people. I give you a lot of stuff during
Yeah.
our time together, but I want you to think for what your audience is about. If you just take those parts and let your grandson know what it is, and he starts like, oh, that's how I find the quotes. Oh, that's how he looks up a warrant, and that's how he connects it. I teach that to 11 and 12th grade. Sorry, 11 and 12-year-olds. Sixth and seventh grade dyslexic kids drives their older brothers and sisters crazy because they're typically AP English everything, AP students. They're in AP English fighting to be class valedictorian. And now their younger brother or sister is using warrants to connect their data, which are good quotes because they're based on universal themes. So structurally, they're much more advanced than what they're doing as seniors in high school AP English. Now, the senior AP English kid is writing nicer words. It flows better, but the content, the analysis is so much stronger by the 12-year-old. Drives them insane, makes the dyslexic feel like a winner. I love doing that.
Oh God. Okay. Unfortunately, I'm watching the clock just a little bit. I'm going to go to something that once again that you gave me. We love our roles as grandparents, all of us. And if we can offer something of value to one of the grands, you talk about grandparent-powered literacy, 10-minute micro drills that build confidence at any age.
Right. So I want you to give me an example of a grandparent doing this so that I can best communicate it to your audience.
So what I'm trying to teach or what help my
Okay,
grandperson.
so are we talking about the grandparents trying to teach their grandchild something?
Well, it's bedtime. We're reading, a
Okay,
story.
that process that I showed you about with the review, that was what I was talking about there. How to
Okay.
take it and go through that half circle process, the hero, the universal theme, and the villain. That's exactly what that was.
Okay. And also, what I'm hearing is, I mean, you hear the classic stories. What is there? There's the movie Frozen, there's dinosaurs, like all that sort of stuff that kids get so passionate about.
Right. But
And so I
finding
guess if
that,
we choose that to
yeah, so
begin.
let's take for example Frozen. Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
Okay, what's one of the kid ones do you that the kids go crazy for that you've seen?
My BFF.
My BFF. Okay.
I've
Now,
seen that 400 times.
what's the universal theme of My BFF?
Just I don't know. It was a couple.
But what's the one that speaks to you? How do you reduce it to one word?
Oh, to one word. Gentleness.
Gentleness. Now, again, do you see how broad that is? That's what your grandkid's going to come up with. All right. And how do you communicate? Now you tell them, we want to come up with your own special universal thing. So we just go through that process again. And who's the hero? In gentleness, what character's the hero?
Oh, the BFF.
The BFF. What does the BFF want to do in one sentence?
Honestly, I can't even remember, despite the fact I've seen it 400 times.
Right. But we just go through that exact same process. And then those words, then you can take those words, because these kids are like cyborgs. They're really plugged into the AI. We can go to, because most of them just use ChatGPT. Sonnet 4.5 is really designed for business people. They don't even know what it is. So you go to ChatGPT and say, here's the unit we like to hear, action word, most important word. Usually go with the most important words, but sometimes action is better. You say that and you say, okay, now we're going to go. I don't usually go real deep with the younger kids. Now what we're going to do is find out who the ultimate villain is. Is it a person or a concept? And you can really teach him a lot, especially if it's a concept. Come up with the reasons, flip the script, look at through the villain's eyes, get all that information and say, how can we come up with an interesting story about it with all this data? And then it does. And then the kids are so thrilled with that. Because this is a unique story about something that they've watched I mean, it's where you get a kid a video they like and they're just watching it 50,000 times. All right. And now they have their own unique story. Then they can go to their friends and say, here's my story about my BFF. All right. And they tell it, and the kids are enthralled. They're like, you came up with this? Yeah, because we went through that process.
It's an unusual, but it's such a cool sense of empowerment that we're giving our grandchildren.
Yes.
And it sounds like
And
that's going to work even if they're not dyslexic.
oh no, it works. What I routinely teach the older brothers and sisters that I worked with how to do this. They go through it like literally 10 times faster. But what happens with the dyslexic is they go drastically deeper. ADD, ADHD kids do a middle ground. But the dyslexic goes so much deeper. And as we get along in the craft of research, what drives the older kids nuts is that the dyslexic comes up with a brilliant idea. Like, for example, when I had to come up with my idea, how to transfer what I learned in law school over to normal kids, the professor's name was Professor James Collins. He wrote a book called Strategies for Struggling Writers. And it had three default strategies of copying, visualization, narrative. And I had to take his work from mild learned dyslexia to severe dyslexia. He had a $1.5 million grant from the education department for this. People said it was going to take 2, 3 years minimum, if ever. I did in less than 2 weeks because I had to get the application in for the university competition within a month, and I didn't have more than 2 weeks. He put A plus excellent, and then I got second place, got 15 grand, and that's what I used to get the data from several private students privately outside. Because the school district, Averill Park, said work with our best outside of the program for a couple of years. Then they really listened to those kids. And then they finally said, they went to the state senate and said, yeah, we've tried this outside for years. The kids love it. We want to see what we can do inside now. We need money for that. And the senate said, okay, here's the money. I had 2 weeks to do what takes people for a magnitude of that increase. That takes years, if ever. That's the advantage of dyslexia because I have 2.5 times the neural activity up here.
I'm just going to throw one more thing at you, and that's voice to text.
I would say until the kid can really read or write at the high school level, stay the heck away from it because they have to learn to write before they do that. They have to learn to spell. They have to get at least pass their 8th grade reading and writing test from whatever state you're in or whatever country you're in. Because if you can't do the basics, it's kind of like, like how you go into the kids and let's say something cost $1.36 and you give them $2.36 and they're confused. Or if the calculator breaks down, they don't know what to do. You have to be able to do the basics because sometimes it's the technology breaks and you have to be at least somewhat coherent in your writing. And what I found after doing this for over 20 years, you can get into high school, legitimate high school. You pass the 8th grade reading writing test. That's at least where you can start doing voice to text.
All right. I really appreciate the way you make everything make sense. My brain is just going crazy right now, but that's okay. Okay, so I've already mentioned we've got mid-age women. Is there anything we haven't talked about for a mid-age woman who knows that she's, can you be partially dyslexic or are you just
Yes,
dyslexic?
yeah. So let me so here's the two questions. The first one is what I call ADD, ADHD, or mildly dyslexic. So I'm just going to ask you if this is you. Are you ready? In your area, you said you really like to edit podcasting. When you're thinking about editing podcasting, do you have ideas flying around your head at light speed? Key question, but with little to no organization. Is that you or not you?
No,
Okay,
I'm the
you're not
queen of
ADD.
research.
Yeah, you're not. If you were ADD, ADHD, or mild, or at least mildly dyslexic, you would have answered yes to that question. Okay, now to find out if you're severely dyslexic, you answered yes to that. Then I'm going to say, in your specialty, fingers, keyboard, fingers, keyboard. The idea about editing podcasts is in your head. You want to write about it. You take your fingers, put them on the keyboard. When that your fingers hit the keyboard, does the information in your head fly out of your brain, leaving you with an empty brain? Does that sound familiar, or that's not me?
No, that's not me.
Okay. If you answered yes to that, you're most likely severely dyslexic. Now,
Wow.
these questions are not clinically proven, but what I found over the years is that they're over 90% accurate when people go and spend the big money on the tests. It's to give a in a If it's a partially yes, partially no, I would have to talk to you individually to make sure and see what it is. But generally, those two questions will tell you if you're ADD, ADHD, or mildly dyslexic, or if you're severely dyslexic, instead of dropping 5 grand on a neuropsych evaluation. I came up with those over the years because the parents said we'd rather spend the $5,000 on intervening with the process. And they thought, oh, it's going to cost me 10 times that to solve this. I said, no, actually, you can pretty much solve it for less than five, for the rest, less than the cost of the evaluation. And they're like, huh? It's like, yeah, we've got this much more efficient than you think. The entire solution to get the kid, well into advanced high school writing from can't do anything is less than 30,000 words. It's not that complicated. I spent 20 plus years making it not that complicated.
Okay, which is the perfect segue. You have dyslexia classes. Are those youth-based or is it
Well,
anybody?
pretty much what happened is because of just, the shift in the educational landscape. The US gymnastics had this horrible guy that did horrible things, and he's in jail for the rest of his life. Since then, they came up with something called Safe Sport. And it has made me working with kids under 18 a legal minefield. So what I shifted my process
Okay.
to is, well, I'm a male tutor. If you're a woman working with young kids, it's much safer. But as a male, I generally don't work with kids directly until they're 18 and out of high school, in college, because or out of high school, because then we think them as adults. So what I typically do is like I do with Kimberly, I train the parents to train their kids. And just so you know, when Facebook gave us way too much information, I actually ran the numbers. This is 90% moms, just what it is. Dads don't tend to get involved until you got a failure to launch thing. The kids are going to flunk out of college and they don't want them living at home at 30. So what I do is I train the parents, typically moms or grandmoms, because I do a lot of that, to work with their kids or their grandkids. And just like Kimberly, how we in that way, if I'm because I speak to the kids a lot, but mom or grandmom is like literally right there. Okay. So what I do is I show you, like I did with Kimberly, we send you some information, you read it over, we work together on a weekly basis, and pretty much you just go through it at your own pace. Kimberly really pressed it. She was doing three half-hour sessions a week. But remember, she's a homeschooling mom. Most others do 3 or 4 10 to 15-minute sessions a week. So it takes a bit more time. Sometimes you do none a week. Sometimes you do more in the summer. It doesn't matter as long as you just try to generally keep to it. But the holidays come up, you got graduations, vacations, life gets in the way. You can do it when you have time. And basically, the best thing to do is just go to dyslexiaclasses.com. That's plural, dyslexiaclasses.com. And just you're going to see there a little button that says download free guide. Don't hit that, answer a few questions. You'll get a document, the three reasons your dyslexic child is having trouble in school. And the most important thing is to then to actually go on the calendar and to book a time to work with me for a half an hour. I can tell you what your kid's speciality is, what their book is, and what the audiobook is. In one extreme example, I had a child who was 13, very dyslexic. His speciality was a college level chemistry video on how to turn, and I'm not joking, paint thinner into cherry soda. And I had the AI help me create custom things for him, and he loved it. But that's how hard it is to find the speciality. So that's what we do during that half hour. And there's no charge for that.
Okay, there also isn't any charge, as far as I could see, for a book that you co-wrote called Dyslexic Students: What It Takes to Succeed in College and Graduate School. It's Not What You Think. That was an
Yes,
interview.
that's a document that we send out to people that request that. What that was is an interview with my mentor, Professor Dr. Holmes, just so you know his backstory. He's extremely dyslexic. He went to the University of Chicago, interviewed by the second leading economist of the 20th century, got their top scholarship. He didn't learn to read until fifth grade. He was going to be denied college because he was a horrific D student. And he decided to enter a science competition in the 1950s. That's when science competitions mattered. He won the state of Indiana and got third place in the country. So they had to let him into college. He started off with seven majors, ended up with three. And that tells you what really matters when you're trying to get through. Really, what it kind of concludes is that when you want to go on to a graduate program, a solid recommendation from a professor means more than grades or GRE score or any other type of board score. I can tell you, I can recall sitting outside Dr. Barnett's office. He was the chair of the communications at SUNY Center at Buffalo. He called up the chair of the communications department at Cornell and he said, "This is my Ivy, this is my student. I want her in your program, in your PhD program. I want her funded." And he pressed, he's saying, "She's the best I've worked with in years. You have to take her." Guy's like, okay, we'll accept her, we'll fund her. Okay, because they know each other so well. And it goes into describing what it means for people who are dyslexic.
Wow. Okay. I'm gonna go have a nap when we finish.
Sure.
Oh my goodness. Okay, can I ask you a personal question before we close? You've just glanced off of this earlier on. What does it take to become a New York State Senate-funded dyslexia researcher?
The Senate doesn't fund dyslexia research. So what I had to do was I first of all I went to the state education department. They didn't, because back then it was three men in a room, the speaker, the majority leader, the governor made all the decisions. And I came from the majority leader's office. They thought it was presumptuous for them to push beyond them, so they said, "We want a New York State distinguished professor in psychology to review this. That's our best. Where is this out of?" I said, "Buffalo. That's our biggest university center, our biggest college." They said, "Go get one of them to approve this." There were two in all of Western New York. So I just so happened the one who gave me an evaluation a few years before was one of those two. So I went over. She said she would do it, and she wrote back after 20 hours of beating the hell out of me in an evaluation to make sure that this wasn't fake. Remember, she already had the previous data. And she said, "Yes, this is absolutely true. I went from first grade to grad level and down again." This is why this is so. Then the reason they said, go connect this to a senior writing scientist. There's only one possibility, Dr. Collins. And that's the one I did in less than 2 weeks. Then the school district said, well, we're not going to just take these ideas. Are you crazy? You have to test this out first. So that's what I got the 15,000 for. I worked with those kids for years outside. And then finally, the school district went to the majority leader's office, which he represented, and said, we want this. They say, okay. So then they called the Department of Economic Development. We want this. Then the Center for Economic Growth, the guy that coordinates, his name was Jeff Lawrence, all the economic activity in the Capital Region. Yeah, we want this. And the State Education Department said, well, we got this approval from a SUNY distinguished professor. And then the professors both said, you should do this. And they said, okay, but we're not going to give you a ton of money. And I said, well, I don't need a ton of money. They offered me $50,000. I said, heck, I can do it for 7,500. They looked at me like, I said, the big part of this is it's economics, because that was my first degree. So then we did that for multiple years, and then we presented in New York City in 06.
Okay, and what has New York City done with it since 06?
Oh, that was the fun one. They told me to come back when I could actually help kids. Not superstars, but because there are very few of those, the normal kids. So then New York State came up with this dyslexia task force that presented last December, and they tried to implement it. And we're the highest tax state in the country. Sorry, California, we beat you. We spend more per kid than anybody. We spend like 32 grand per kid, an extra 20 grand if they're dyslexic on top of that. So they found out that their own recommendations that took a year of the best people in the state, they can't afford it, and it takes too long to teach. It takes weeks and weeks and weeks to learn. The teachers union went crazy. I met up with Evelyn Whitebay, one of the three teachers on the task force, and we can go and teach my process to teachers for elementary school in 3 hours. If we were talking about middle, sorry, elementary and middle, we can do that in 6 hours.
Holy moly.
So
Okay.
now we're trying to get that passed. We're writing a book called Literacy and Dyslexia Reading Turnaround. We're in the process. We're almost finished with it. We're going to get that printed up and then go and try to convince the state that this is the way to go because they can afford it. Heck, I said, give me the budget you had to create the report, and we can teach every school district in the state.
How about the country?
That's how. Well, we can go and do that as well, but I'm just trying to get this through New York State. There's two of us, remember. We found out she was 3 to 4 times more successful than the typical special ed teacher. She just had a court-appointed kid who she went through the same thing I told you about with Kimberly, but instead of a grade and a half level closing that gap, she had an increase of 6.6 grade levels in the same time period. But remember, she's a master teacher. And I had a homeschooling mom do it.
I'm just thinking that every teacher out there, especially at the elementary middle school level, should be learning this. Okay. Your website link is dyslexiaclasses.com. It's in the show notes, and all the links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, I have the advantage of being able to go through this conversation again in editing. Russell's already said this, but it's in my closing notes here as well, that it strikes me as a conversation that needs to be listened to twice, three, four times if dyslexia is anywhere in our life. I'd appreciate hearing your thoughts. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. My voice is tired because my brain is tired. What question did I not ask Russell? Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. By this age, we've gotten really good at disguising or compensating for any perceived shortcomings. Maybe a friend of yours is doing exactly that, or maybe they have concerns about a grandchild. Something like dyslexia needs to be destigmatized, and both Russell's methods and his positivity need to be mainstreamed. Sharing this episode is you doing your part. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button at your favorite podcast platform. It helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. A reminder to check out the resource tab at boomwithabang.com. You can look up previous podcast episodes by subject. You can find books written by guests, some interesting courses and offerings, lists of age-appropriate job and philanthropic possibilities. And if you're at all curious about the life of a house slash pet sitter, I'm journaling that journey on the website too. Russell Van Brocklin, thank you so much for being my guest today. Shedding light on dyslexia and shining a light into the world of people with it, even if you did push my brain to its extreme limits. I really appreciate you sharing what you shared today.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great rest of the week.